The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody. Welcome or welcome back, as the case may be, here on this ninth day of April 2021. It is our final hour of the week. It is our final hour of the day, which means as we get ready to dive into the topical plate of this final hour, it's my final opportunity to tell you what we all already know, but we just enjoy saying. It's Friday.
Wow! I feel good. I feel good. Ow! I feel good.
I feel good.
I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good?
I feel good.
I wouldn't.
So good. So good. I got a year.
So as we dive in, little Howard Jones.
I've been waiting for so long.
New song, which is not a new song at all. Things almost 40 years old.
Oh, don't be fooled, I want you see.
Alrighty, busy hour.
Don't be fooled, I want you hear.
Much to evaluate from the week gone by, but time once again for a little trip into that very crowded Texas 06 congressional race, where the passing of Ron Wright leaves a big vacancy and a big and important special election on the 1st of May. In a race this crowd is, and this is even more crowded because it's not even a primary. It's a bunch of Republicans and a bunch of Democrats and an independent and a libertarian all in there in just a big scrum. And if somebody gets one vote more than 50%, boom, there's your successor. There's your brand new District 6 congressman. No one expects that to happen. The name of the game, it appears, is make the runoff. In other words, be in the top two, and then those two people face off. You know, a field this crowded, and I've talked to a lot of folks in this and a lot of folks in primaries, it can make your brain turn to jelly because so many people have relatively similar views, especially all the Republicans have relatively, if not completely, similar views. So you find yourself looking, is there anything that makes somebody stand out? Anything in the biography, anything, just anything that makes somebody stand out. If you've got something that only you can claim, that can be an interesting lane for you. So pleasure to go to the Texas 06 race and meet at least the one guy that I know of who's pretty well done with Trump. But that doesn't define everything. We'll talk about a number of things in his campaign. It is Mr. Michael Wood. Pleasure to meet you, sir. How are you doing?
I feel fine. It's good to be Friday. It's good to be here with you.
It is good to have you here. Listen, we'll get to the juicy stuff first. But I always ask everybody, what made you decide to run, especially in a race that you knew would be this crowded? And also give us a little bit of backstory on you, where you're from, what's your story. You have some military service that I want to thank you for. So tell us a little bit about you, and then we'll dive deeper.
Yeah, just real quick. I was born and raised in Midland, Texas, out in West Texas, and after college, I went into the Marine Corps. I was an infantry officer. I did two tours in Afghanistan, came back with a few Purple Hearts. I left active duty, came to North Texas, and I'm a small businessman in Tarrant County, married with four daughters. I'm a conservative Republican. I'm pro-life, pro-gun, pro-oil. You know, and I always thought that if I got into politics, it would be 10 or 15 years in the future, but I've grown increasingly concerned about the direction of the country, the direction of the state, and most importantly, the direction of the Republican Party. So I felt like this is the first battle since January 20th for the soul of the GOP. So I felt like I had to jump in.
Gotcha. So the direction of the party, soul of the GOP, I mean, that is the language from the wing of the Republican Party that just has lost its affinity, if they ever had one, for Trump. So let's go to the history. If I understand correctly, you voted for him in 2020, but not in 2016. What was the 2016 story?
Yeah, in 2016, I just, you know, I've got the military background. I just felt like he didn't have, I was concerned about him being commander-in-chief. Mm-hmm. I was concerned about him having the nuclear codes, and I just didn't feel like he was worthy to sit in the seat of Washington, the seat of Lincoln, the seat of Reagan.
And Hillary was?
So I felt like I just, no, I voted third party. It was a difficult choice, but, you know, I just felt like I just could not bring myself to pull the lever for that man. He was a better president than I expected. Mm-hmm. And then that combined with an increasingly radicalized Democratic Party that we've seen over the past 4 years led me to vote for him in 2020. But I think that all of his actions since Election Day, including on January 6th, forfeited him the right to ever lead this party again.
And this is what's really important. I think what I want you to, I think you want everybody to know this, is this is not the story of kind of a consistent, you know, Bill Kristol, never Trump story. You like many, many people who are Trump skeptical and even Trump opposed in 16, he showed you some things that led you to vote for him in 2020. I mean, he won you over in some ways. And so it's not really that, and I want to have you dig a little deeper on this. It was the post-election. It was the election uncertainty. It was January 6th. So that was the deal breaker for you. That's what places you now in the portion of the Republican Party that says it's really important not to hang, not to attach our fate to this guy. So what is it since the election that was so repellent?
Yeah, I think that the founding fathers were very wise to warn us about demagogues, people that would play to the passions of the people irresponsibly. And I think that his big lie, saying that the election was stolen, really undermined the faith that the American people had in our system. I think in a lot of ways it actually played into Vladimir Putin's propaganda that American elections are corrupt, they're illegitimate, they're fraudulent, they're tawdry affairs. And, you know, we're very blessed in this country, and we have been for about 250 years, that we've always had a peaceful transfer of power, with the obvious exception of the Civil War. And, you know, he undermined that with his rhetoric. And it was one of the worst things an American president's ever done.
Really?
To do that. And I think that all led up to what happened on January 6th, where the heart of our democracy was attacked.
So you believe the 2020 election result was, I mean, no result is completely free of fraud or error, but you believe that it was absolutely reliably found, and that any doubt that anybody has about the changes in law on COVID policy or constitutional questions in Pennsylvania or anything, the odd middle of the night spikes, all of that is of zero concern to you? You believe it is a 100% reliable Biden victory?
I think it was a free and fair election, and
so that's a yes.
Our side lost. So
that's a yes. You believe that there are no problems whatsoever in this election?
That's not what I said.
No. I'll finish the question. There are no problems in this election that are troubling enough to create doubt in the mind of anyone.
In a country as large and as diverse and as chaotic as ours, you can find examples of just about anything. Mm-hmm. There's a certain amount of fraud in every election, but there was not the amount of fraud needed on the scale that would make this an illegitimate election.
Okay.
Free and fair election.
That is an absolutely fair. That's what I was asking. That's an absolutely fair answer. So let's go to the demagoguery. By the way, a lot of people refer to the 75 million who voted for Trump as if they are monolithic. They're not. But a whole lot of them absolutely believe there were troubling things about that. The president himself believes there were troubling things about that. And you disagree. And I understand that. But at what point does your disagreement with that make him a demagogue, the people who believe him somehow less smart than you, and the whole election challenge something that deserves this kind of stigma?
Well, I don't think that anyone who, you know, disagrees with me on this certainly is less smart than me. I think that it's very easy to say things on Twitter. It's really easy to rant about things on social media. The Trump team had 2-3 months to make their case in court, and that's a much harder thing to do. And they were given plenty of opportunities, I think 60 to 80 court cases, many of which were decided by Republican-appointed judges, some of which were Trump-appointed judges, and they just couldn't bring, you know, they just couldn't bring the evidence that this was somehow an illegitimate election. And this is the thing that really upsets me about this. He took advantage of the raw and the noble patriotism of the American people. There's a very deep revolutionary vein in the American psyche that goes back to the Revolutionary War. He took advantage of that and said they were about to live under an illegitimate government. These are people who love their country. These are people who oftentimes are the first to rally to the flag and join the military whenever this country is attacked. And he took advantage of that patriotism. I don't think that anybody's less smart than me by any means. I think they've been misled by a guy
that makes them less smart. Because I don't presume monolithic opinion at all, but you're talking to me.
No, I don't think that's why this is important, but
there are millions of Americans who absolutely, sincerely believe this result was jacked and that it was not properly found. And that's a disagreement that you have with them. So that's fine. And that's a disagreement that people can have. But for the president who believes that to be pilloried as some demagogue taking advantage of the poor sheep-like masses, that's kind of insulting.
I don't understand why that's insulting.
I'll tell you why. Because you are portraying them as having come under the spell of this despotic figure, and that they are horribly misled. I don't feel misled.
I don't think it's anything about coming under a spell. I think that most normal people don't have politics at the center of the life, at the center of their lives, and that's a healthy thing.
Right, sure.
And I think that whenever this guy that they love, that they supported, whenever he says things, especially standing behind the mantle of the presidency,
right,
it's not about whether or not they're smart or not. It's because life is busy. They don't follow every sort of up and down in the news cycle. Mm-hmm. And they trust their president,
yes,
and that trust was taken advantage of by this man. That's why he deserves to be called a demagogue.
Gotcha. Well, then you can say five times that you're not insulting these people or that you don't feel smart than they are, but you're
no, lying. I don't.
But
I respect you, these you, people,
you, which no, is why no, I'm no, no, you don't.
Truth,
no, you don't. No, you don't respect
more
them.
People
you,
on
oh,
the right.
I respect these people, so I'm telling them the truth. So if you'll only smarten up and stop listening to Trump and stop listening to most conservatives and start listening to you, then we'll become smarter. Disagreements are fine. I totally get it. That's great. There are tons of people who believe, you know, there wasn't that much of an illegality or irregularity in this election. That's an opinion that you can have. But the condescension.
This is a fact.
Do you believe the Supreme Court was right or wrong to turn away the Texas challenge, which went after the constitutionality of some of the last minute changes in election law on November 3rd? Was the Supreme Court right or wrong to turn down that challenge?
So this is separate from Ken Paxton's lawsuit. This is the one that came after that?
Well, it was Ken Paxton and Texas and about 18 other states, sort of shorthand referred to as the Texas challenge. The Supreme Court said Alito and Thomas wanted to. They were the only ones who did. Do you agree with the justices who said, nope, we're not even going to look at that?
So I think we're getting our wires crossed here. There are two separate lawsuits. One was the challenge brought by Ken Paxton. The second was the one that was brought by Pennsylvania. Paxton's lawsuit was an anti-constitutional abomination. It was a stunt.
Sweet Jesus.
And Texas should be embarrassed.
Okay,
the idea that states can tell other states how to run their election system. That's absolutely
It didn't do anything of the kind. It was an assertion on the part of Texas, and 18 states agreed that our right as a state to have the proper state level influence on how an election is determined was completely waylaid and damaged by election impropriety.
A joke, which is why it was laughed out of the Supreme Court unanimously, if I remember correctly.
Not correct, but anyway, go ahead.
No, I think you're thinking about the wrong. You're thinking about another lawsuit where Thomas and Alito did dissent. This just simply isn't how our electoral system works in this country. And there was a time a few years ago when conservatives were very good about standing up for states' rights, and saying this is a state's rights federal issue. Government. This is not the role of the federal government. Mm-hmm.
This is a state's rights. So so since we're sort of dealing post 2020, it is your wish and you have the endorsement of Adam Kinzinger, who hates Trump's guts as well, that the future of the Republican Party depends heavily on dear God, not following him. So what kind are you a DeSantis fan? Who do you kind of like in 24?
Oh, God, I would really love to get to a point where we're not constantly talking about presidential races.
Yeah, but, you know, hey,
DeSantis has been a pretty good governor. And mm-hmm. I think that he's done a really good job sort of pushing back against a whole lot of the unfair media criticism that he's got. The 60 mm-hmm. Minutes piece from a few days ago was an absolute hit piece, and mm-hmm. I don't understand how they can still stand behind that. So mm-hmm. he's been a pretty good governor. Mm-hmm. I don't know who else is in the running.
I won't, but no, you're right. That is a long, long way away. So yeah. I'm really glad to have talked to you. And this is there because there are people who totally agree with you in the Republican Party. They are done with Trump. They feel that he is a despot. They feel that he is a demagogue. They feel that he is. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Is he responsible for the riots on January 6th?
Yes.
OK, great. So all of that. What percentage of the Republicans in District 6 do you think agree with you on that?
35 to 40%. But I have said that, you know, I will say that being out on the campaign trail, I've been pretty amazed with the number of people that I've been able to change their minds. I think there are a lot of people who are unfortunately in a bubble, and they haven't really heard a lot of the things that I've said. So I would say probably 35%, but it's growing. Listen, the Republican Party is going to get to where I am. All right, we're going to get to where I am, and we're going to move past this man. We can either do it now, or we can do it after we lose in the midterms, another presidential election, the midterms after that. So we should just do it now.
Yeah. Okay.
Before we cede the country to the Democrats for generations.
And anybody failing to agree with your narrative that Trump is a despot and those who followed him are simply not paying enough attention.
I don't know. Do you think that I'm dumb because I disagree with you on this?
I don't. I absolutely don't. I've not said anything of the kind.
Well, I don't think people who disagree with me on this are dumb either.
No, you clearly do. Yeah, on multiple occasions, you've said that they're just not paying enough attention to stuff. They just don't see his despotism. They're not patriotic enough. They don't appreciate the legacy of America enough. It is condescending to its core.
I don't think it's condescension to stand up and say what I actually think.
No, no, not at all.
I think that people are wrong about this. I think that they're wrong about this.
I understand.
I'm not condescending to anybody. I'm the first politician in a lot of cases who has stood up and said, you know, what actually happened. And I'm doing that because I respect them.
Yeah, I understand. But there are a lot of people who feel differently and they are not blind to what they think actually happened. There are a lot of things that are matters of opinion and not necessarily matters of fact.
Yeah, well, we should talk about facts and not talk about feelings and whatever it is that you're trying to get to. This is one of the worst.
You know, it's your feeling that he's a despot. It's your feeling that he's a despot. It's your feeling that everybody that disagrees with you is just deluded. That is your feeling, Michael.
I think you're getting your D words confused. I never said despot. I said demagogue. This is one of the worst parts of what Trump has done to the right is he's turned us into a bunch of whiny little lefties. It's all about feelings. It's all about, well, you've got your truth. I've got my truth. Let's minimize.
Put it all into context.
No, that's not who we are. That's not who we used to be. That's not who we need to be going forward.
Twitter feed. Hang on a second. Is Michael Wood? What is? Give me the Twitter and the. Here we go. At Michael Wood Texas. Michael Wood TX. Michael Wood TX for Twitter. What's the campaign website?
MichaelWoodForCongress.com.
MichaelWoodForCongress.com. I really appreciate you being on. This was great idea because there are people driving around right now thinking you're totally right and I'm totally crazy and they deserve a constituency. And I'm glad you're there. I'm glad you're running and I'm glad you're on the show. And I totally so appreciate your service to our country and I really appreciate your time today.
Thanks. The temperature got turned up a little bit, but I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you, right, Max? It's what the show's about. It's what the country is about. God bless, Michael. Thank you. Michael Wood at Michael Wood Texas on Twitter, Michael Wood TX, Michael Wood for Congress on the website, 926. Well, all righty then. Let's hop into the newsroom with Gordon Griffin and do the home stretch half hour that'll take us out and into the weekend. Who's ready? 866-660-5759. You guys are next as soon as we check news with Gordon. I'm Mark Davis, 933. Joe Jackson in 939. Stranger Than Fiction. This works.
Please, mister, can you help me try to find my baby's house? It's 3 in the morning and the car ain't around.
Love me some Jackson.
I can't find a house and I forgot the number, but I gotta give her these roses to relieve her pain.
Okay, let's discuss. I will, for the rest of my life, wonder what makes these people tick. I am fascinated by it. I've chronicled it ever since the Trump ascendancy, as I noticed that some people who thought themselves conservative, and in fact, who are conservative, nonetheless, just have a cognitive break with Trump. Now, here's what makes Michael Wood better than Bill Kristol, because isn't anyone. Here's what I mean. He saw the Trump president. By the way, if you're just joining us, this is my lot in life. Just constantly telling you, you've got to go get the podcast. If you're just getting in the car right now, yesterday it was like, oh, my gosh, what did George P. Bush just do? Today it was congressional candidate Michael Wood running in Texas 06, the Ron Wright vacancy. And if you're in that district and you want a Republican successor to Ron Wright, but you have just had it up to your eyeballs with Trump and have no use with Trump, this is your guy. And there is a percentage of people who, and that's why I'm glad he's running. That's why he has a constituency. That's why I was glad to have him on the show. And he did a great job. It was great. So I'm intrigued by that estimate that 35 to 40% of the district agrees with him about Trump. We'll be seeing about that. And the notion that all people really need to do is just listen to him more and they will be won over by him. We'll see about that, too. This gentleman's service to our country, are you kidding me? Beyond doubt. And the actual Trump presidency, this is funny, because in Bill Kristol, in George Will, just various other, you know, never Trumpers, they saw the results of the Trump presidency and just didn't care. This gentleman did. He said, you know what? It was a better presidency than I thought. There were things that there was things that I liked, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Voted for him in 2020. It was this is so micro specific. And that's why I was, you know, glad to dig deep into it and go listen. 660amtheanswer.com, click podcasts and go get the 9 o'clock hour and all of its glory. It was the election challenge. The gentleman could not believe that the election was being challenged. And all of you who think the election was tainted are just wrong. And all of you who supported the president's challenge to that election and his vociferous objections to that election, you have simply fallen under the spell of a demagogue. And this is where we get to the personality of these people. Because if somebody is running or somebody, if I'm just talking to somebody over coffee or whatever, and they go, you know, Trump's just a little too spicy for me. I like the agenda, but woof. And I didn't think that the election was sufficiently dirty to merit, you know, all of that hand-wringing angst and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, okay, we'll disagree about that, but okay. But that's not the pitch from these people. The pitch from these people is this made him, Michael Wood's own words, this is the worst thing a president has ever done. Really? Really? And that anyone who happens to, and he can say all day that he doesn't have an insulting, condescending view of you if you disagree with him, but he obviously does. That's the language that is contained in the notion that if only people will listen to me, they will see that Trump is a demagogue. And that the election challenges were a disgrace, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not like I have my view, you have yours, you know, agree to disagree. We'll never, you know, we reach common ground on that. No. That's fine. That'll pass muster every day. It's no. There's something the matter with you if you don't see this my way. We will see how that works out. But I'm very grateful to the gentleman. That was some wonderful radio. And I truly, truly believe that if you got a primary where 53 people are running, that there ought to be a candidate for everybody. And if you are a Trump-hating Republican, Michael Wood is your guy. You have a voice. You have a candidate. All righty, 866-660-5759 in Dallas. Elizabeth, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you? Hey, Elizabeth.
Oh.
That's
here,
okay.
Hi. Here I am. Here I am.
Sounds like you got a lot going on in the house. Nice to have you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Thank you. I just want to totally agree. I totally agree with you. I'm so grateful that he actually came out.
Me too.
So we can actually make sure he doesn't get elected.
Oh, no, now I'm bald now.
This guy is he's an ever-Trumper. Okay.
But I made that distinction, the definite, I mean, never means never, okay? Never means never. It means the people who profess to be conservative and they saw what Trump did and they still hated him, that was not this gentleman. This gentleman, honestly, he voted for him. I don't think he would have this kind of anti-Trump venom if the president had simply said, well, I lost, whatever, and slinked away. It was the post-election challenges that chafed him. He does not have the never Trumpers' willful blindness to the really good things that Trump actually did as president. So I would make that distinction. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, first, I think he's just trying to try to reach out to the,
sure,
to Trump supporters, but really, really doesn't care about us. And he's very ignorant and condescending.
Condescending. He seems very smart. I wouldn't project ignorance onto him at all. I think he's a very smart gentleman. Every call gives me five other things to say. Let me get more people on the radio here. 866-660-5759. We are in Wiley. Michael, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Morning, Mark. How you doing?
I am good.
And your son, is he progressing?
He is. We've still got a couple more months of crutches, but graduation is a month and a fraction away, and we're thrilled. And he's just a wonderful, wonderful young man, and we're all leaning into each other and leaning into God. And thank you for your concern about him. Appreciate it.
Well, good for you. Hey, I want to talk to you about this whole idea. I'm a disabled veteran, Vietnam. Don't say thank you, because here's my deal with that.
Too late. Thank you.
Some people, some people deem that as I'm no more qualified than the next guy or woman.
Right.
Because I'm a veteran. And I really despise people that do that and wear it on their sleeves. And
does anybody come to mind? Is there anybody who you feel has run for office and seeks to use their
Mike Wood?
No, what?
I got two purple hearts. I'm this.
Here's the thing.
I'm not saying
there's a phenomenon that happens as the thing plays out and it did not hit you well. Do you then retroactively think of everything he said and cast it in a bad light? If this was a Trump-loving, DeSantis-loving, et cetera, agreed with you about everything and talked about those couple of purple hearts, would that have struck you as opportunistic braggadocio then?
Absolutely.
Okay. Consistency check. Okay. So you just don't,
I've been suffering with pain and problems for 40 years.
Okay. Then is that sort of possibly through your lens of experience which I totally respect, by the way, please. Of course I do. But to what level of attention to a military background is it OK for a candidate to profess?
OK. I don't know about that, but I'm just saying vote for me because I'm a veteran.
I don't know that anybody's saying that, but if somebody does have that on their resume, I'm glad to have it out.
That's
there.
That's what he came across.
Yeah.
He came across as, I'm just, my opinion now, strictly my opinion. He came across as really obnoxious, condescending.
Yeah.
I'm a veteran. You're not.
Condescending, yes. Obnoxious is a judgment call. People say I'm obnoxious. I don't attach any of that to his military service. It's all in the ear of the beholder. Michael, thank you. And thank you for your call. And whether you'll hear it or not, thank you for your service. here's the thing about military service on a campaign resume. If someone has served in the military, I love that about you. Does that automatically make you right? Heck no. Jimmy Carter was in the military, dude. So are there people running who have military back? There are Democrats who ran for the military. They were one of the Democrats in the primary against Beth Van in the Democrat end coming for Texas 24, which Beth Van Dyne, thank God, eventually won. Kim Olson had a proud military record, and she's wrong on virtually every issue. So I thank you for your service, but it doesn't make you right. And I mean, not about anything. Now, of the people who are running who I agree with, let's say you're 10 people running and I agree with all of you. If there are some of you who have military service, is that a kind of a plus? Yeah, I love that about a person, but I don't love it so much that it will blind me to beliefs you have that are that are wrong. All right. Let me, God, we could have do another hour on this gentleman. That was fun. It was interesting and I appreciate it. I love y'all. It's been an amazing week. And in this Texas 06 election is on the 1st of May. Ton of people running. And I'm glad to have brought many of them to you. I'm particularly glad today. All right, everybody, a final word, a final tune, and some weekend wishes for you next.
And we'll see them soon through days of night.
Brooklyn's own Richie Havens.
But now silver leaves on mirrors bring delight.
There in the summer of Woodstock, they had so many acts going on, and Richie said, they're trying to kill time and stretch for time on the stage, and the technology wasn't exactly working, and things weren't even set up. He said, well, I'll go play for a while. And he had to play for a long time, man. It's like 14 minutes of freedom, 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 freedom. Keep going, Richie. Stretch it out, man. And he did. Quite the gamer. This is Follow from 1966, the great Richie Havens. So thanks a million for hanging out with us. Thank you very, very much to Mike Clark filling in for Rhonda today as she enjoys her volleyball exploits. Technical wizard, Mr. Matt, thank you. And, of course, Gordon Griffin in the newsroom. Have a fantastic and blessed weekend. See you Monday right here on 660 AM The Answer.
You see ain't what they seem. Then don't mind me, 'cause I ain't nothing but a dream.